an old classmate with flashing white teeth and red soles on her shoes. "Come to my car," she'd whispered. They'd kissed for a while, with the girl backed against the driver's side door, their breath steaming in the blackness. "Take off your clothes," she'd said. "It's freezing," he'd protested, but his hands were already working at the buttons of his shirt and the clasp of his belt. He'd squirmed out of his clothes, kicking his pants off over his shoes, and when he looked up, one hand cupping his cock, she was pointing something at him. His heart stopped. A gun? But almost before he'd thought the word, he saw that it wasn't a gun, but a cell phone. A flash blinded him. "Hey," he shouted, "what the fuck?" "See how you like it," she snarled. "See how you like it when they're laughing at you." He'd lunged for her, trying to snatch the phone. "What is your problem?" "What's my problem?" she answered. "You're my problem. You ruined my life." She dived into the car, slamming the door before he could grab the handle. The engine roared to life. He jumped in front of her, thinking she'd stop, but judging now from the cuts on his side and the terrible, sick throbbing in his head, maybe she hadn't. He pushed himself upright and peered at the country club, which was empty and locked. Clothes first, he decided. Clothes first, and then revenge.
Looking back, the knock on the door should have scared me. It should at least have come as a surprise. My house, the one I grew up in, is set at the farthest curve of a cul-de-sac in Pleasant Ridge, Illinois, a small Chicago suburb with quiet streets, neatly kept lawns, and well-regarded public schools. There are rarely pedestrians or passers-by on Crescent Drive. Usually, the only signs of life after 10 p.m. are the flash of headlights on my bedroom wall on the nights that my neighbor, Mrs. Bass, hosts her Shakespeare Society meeting. I live alone, and I'm generally asleep by 10:30. But even so, when I heard the knock, my heartbeat didn't quicken. My palms did not sweat. At some level, underneath conscious thought, a place down in my cells where, the scientists tell us, memories reside, I'd been waiting years for that knock. I pulled open the door and felt my breath catch in my chest. There was my old best friend, Valerie Adler, whom I hadn't seen since high school ended. Valerie, with her heart-shaped face and Cupid's bow lips and lashes heavy and dark as moth's wings. She stood there with her hands clasped at her waist, as if in prayer. There was something dark staining the sleeve of her trench coat. For a minute, we stood staring at each other, and the thought that rose to my mind had the warmth of sunshine and the sweet density of honey. "My friend," I thought, "my friend has come back to me." It was Val who spoke first. "Addie," she said. Her teeth were gleaming, perfect and even. Her voice was the same as I remembered, a husky, "I've got a secret" kind of voice that she currently deployed to great effect, delivering the weather on the nightly newscasts on Chicago's third-rated TV station. She'd been hired 6 months ago. "Listen, something really bad happened," she said. "Can you help me, please?" Val raked both hands through her hair. Had I known she'd had that haircut, that buttercup yellow color, that shoulder-length style when I'd given my hairdresser the go-ahead? I made a point of not watching her station, but maybe I'd caught a glimpse of her as I changed channels, because somehow, here I was, in flannel pajamas and thick wool socks with my ex-best friend's hair on my head. "Look at you," she said, her voice full of wonder. "You got thin." "Come in, Val," I said. If time was a dimension and not a straight line, if you could look down through it like you were looking through water and it could ripple and shift, I was already opening the door. This had all already happened, the way it always did.